Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Like Steven, we sell scented sweatshirts. And the Shopify customer service team helped us so much. And I would say we had questions at 3, 4 a.m. They were there.
For sure. And I think it's why they help turn browsers into buyers.
Totally.
So if you want to manufacture true crime leggings in Guatemala and sell them in Indonesia, sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/bookclub, all lowercase, today.
That's shopify.com/bookclub. shopify.com/bookclub.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hi, I'm Giancarlo Esposito, and I'm here to introduce you to my new series, Parrish. My character, Gray Parrish, was a getaway driver.
I'm retired from life, you know that.
He's in a world over his head.
Tell me about this driver job.
And he's asked to start to figure things out.
I did what you told me to.
He will try to do what's right and seek justice.
Parrish, all new Sundays at 9 on AMC and stream on AMC Plus.
Celebrity Book Club.
Oh, hey, Barbara. Back here again.
It's 2 p.m., too early for you. Is that what you're gonna tell me, Julie?
I guess not for your regular order of, what is it, rosé wine. I'll be right back.
Make it a double. You know, the first time I had rosé was with Cagney Lacey. Pulled me beside in his trailer and he said, I'm gonna let you try a little something. I said, don't you take that tone with me. And he put me in the picture anyway.
Yeah, Barbara, I've heard this one too many times if you catch my drift.
Cagney wasn't a big man, if you know what I mean, but he knew exactly how to use his little...
Barbara, darling. Pull up your shirt. You're revealing yourself.
What? The girls? You don't want to see the girls? Everybody wants to see the girls. This is what put me on the cover of a magazine.
Hey, beautiful ladies. Sally Mae. Give me the regular. 777 rocks, double rocks.
Yeah, yeah.
Get the lady a sherry on ice. So you like that? You like that?
If you want me to like it. I like it.
Haven't I seen you before, cowgirl? Shaking those pretty things over at the theater on Sunset and Wilshire.
Yeah, I've done a show or two in my day.
Oh, no, I know it. Gregory Peck. You were in the big Peck film.
So, I guess there's a little more to you than meets the eye, a man who likes the pictures. You ever see me in The Postman Always Comes for the First Evening and the Last Day of the Month?
I used to run electrical on the MGM lot. Now I just do house chores and stuff like that. But it's a fine little movie star like you doing a bar like this.
You were one of the boys looking at my skirt as I flounced my way down the lot to my trailer.
Guilty as charged.
Here's your 777, and here's your dry sherry, Barbara. Watch out for her. By the end of the night, you'll have no money left.
Sounds like my kind of gal.
How about this, Charlie? You seem like a two-buck chuck if I ever knew one.
Five-buck chuck if you're playing your titties right.
$5? Well, that'll buy me a whole nother round of sherry tomorrow morning when I roll into the bar at 9:00 a.m. Why don't you come back to my studio apartment over on Bevanshire, and I'll show you the time of your life. I'll give you the full Peyton double.
How about this, Miss Barbara Movie Star Peyton? I got a 1956 yellow Cadillac with the fins, with the 46 power horse engine, AM, FM radio. How about we get things going fast?
Honey, the old...
Just like this town goes.
This town don't go so fast for me anymore. The only horse I care about is the one in that little stable you got right on there at Sister Sally Ann May's decrepit old bar, because it's the only place in this godforsaken town that'll serve me my rosé.
And don't you forget, Barbara, you got a pretty heavy tab here.
Oh, don't I know it. Well, $3, Chuck. You want to slap a cold galleon down on the bar and let's hop to it?
Let's gallop away. Sally Mae, I'll get you tomorrow for some of Barbara's tab.
You know
I'm See how well good. She does tonight.
You know I'm good for it.
All right, folks. Stay safe.
I never do.
Who's that knocking at the door? It's all your friends, you filthy whore. Your husband's gone, and we've got books and a bottle of wine to kill.
It's Hollywood.
It's books.
It's gossip.
I'm shook.
It's memoirs.
It's martinis.
It's Studio 54.
It's
Celebrity Book Club.
Come read it while it's hot.
Celebrity Book Club.
Tell your secrets, we won't talk.
Celebrity Book Club.
No boys are allowed.
Celebrity Book Club. Book Club.
Buzz me in, I brought the Cuervo.
Hey, best friend.
Wait, how are you,
how
Stephen?
Are you doing? It's so good to see you.
How's your boyfriend? Are we saying that now?
We're saying boyfriend. We've said it. We'll keep saying it.
And we're going to keep saying it.
Until you want to stick a knife in my goddamn eyes, sweetheart. My boyfriend's great. Yeah. Randomly, I haven't seen my wallet since Wednesday night, which is cool because my boyfriend totally has a wallet. So
that's really, I mean, this is huge, your boyfriend having a wallet.
Yeah, he was paying for me and it was
Okay, little.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay, sugar baby.
I was in my sugar baby arc.
Yeah.
I was totally sugar-pilled.
All your way across this weekend.
Yeah. We have a guest today.
I mean, the grand dame of downtown New York. Yeah. One of the funniest people in the world. An old soul, I would say.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Many, many lives are under that alabaster skin.
A Los Angeles legend, yet also a New York legend.
Yeah.
Some may say she invented being...
Bicoastal. ladies and gentlemen, the mistress.
The mistress.
The mistress of Scotland.
Ruby
McCollister.
Hello. I've hardly could contain myself over here. I wanted to chime in at every fucking moment.
So, Ruby, you suggested this book to us. This book is called I Am Not Ashamed by Barbara Payton. Barbara Payton, who is a fabulous actress in the 40s and 50s.
Yes, the late 40s, early 50s.
Took some wrong turns.
She did.
And she was right at this precipice becoming like this huge star. She did one big movie and then she kind of started to falter a bit and succumbed to drugs and alcohol and men and liquor and jazz and Mexico.
And the studio system and clams and fishing.
And then she died at 39.
Yes, she did.
She's the.
You talk about her
in your One Woman Show,
which is upcoming at Joe's Pub, by the way.
Exactly.
Like, I think the kind of purpose of the book is like, you know, you would say she's a cautionary tale, right? She is the ultimate cautionary tale.
Right.
And I think her writing this book is her trying to push back on that and say, no, I'm not a cautionary tale. This is me. This is my life. I'm proud of it, and it is what it is, and I wouldn't have it any other way. But, you know, of course, you look at it and there's a lot of sadness there.
It's a complicated book because I do talk about Barbara Payton in my one woman show called Tragedy that will be at Joe's Pub on August 19th. And there will also be further shows if you're listening to this past 19th. Just check in.
Workshopping.
Yeah. Every day we're working. Okay. Because when I was a child, I became obsessed with tragic actresses. And that's sort of what the show is about. You know, and my relationship with that. But Barbara Payton came up when I was like 18. And quite honestly, I was just obsessed with her story. And I've like never seen her act. Right. I'm going to be perfectly honest.
So you haven't watched any of the films?
No. Last night, I was finishing, you know, the book, but was like, I mean, starting and finishing the book. Yeah. But I was like, I need to fire up one of these films. And so
I know. I sort of felt that
way
too.
Of course, the toxic mask other side on my bedroom wall as a teenager, I had an 8x11 of Jimmy Cagney.
Yes, you did.
Yes, and I did. Yes, and, you know, and so Jimmy Cagney, he really gave Barbara Payton, you know, the start of her career.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He was, you know, known for being the gangster.
Right.
You know,
right.
All the shoot 'em up, bang 'em up. But he actually himself was, I think, like
Scarface.
You know, a sensitive actor who was like into the labor movement, of
totally.
Course. Then I read he ended up supporting Reagan, but of course
that's what it happens. We
all
he gets,
as you get older, you get conservative.
We all become
you know?
Conservative.
Yeah.
Because we're all going to be like voting for Kylie when we're 80 and just being like, But you know, I watched Public Enemy number one and probably watched one of those Cagney movies. But here's the thing: did I love it at the time, or did I want to love it?
Right, you love the aesthetic, but you didn't necessarily think that the storytelling was that compelling.
The sound is still a little like,
yeah, it's sometimes hard to understand.
Yeah.
And we know that, and we love that, and we respect that. I do watch many old films. I'm not, you know, I'm not misrepresenting myself in that way. It just sometimes the
when
I
they're so old. It's
no. She's not even that old. I mean, like I just got so fascinated with her story when I was like in early college that I was just like obsessed with, again, the tragedy of it, that I like didn't even need to see her fucking act. I just was like obsessed with the pictures and rah. And then I talk about, she is truly one of, I mean, Veronica Lake, who I have watched many of her films. She also had sort of a bizarre later life. Like, she ended up bartending at the Martha Washington House for Women in Manhattan. And, like, how did Veronica Lake, who was, like, way more famous than Barbara Payton ever was, become, like, a taxi driver and a bartender? And I'm fascinated with that. But Barbara Payton is such an interesting one because, you know, and as my father says, as my mother and my father said, both in the business of theater, which doesn't help me much. But anyway, I'm going on and they're saying, you never know, you know, someone could have a write up in Vanity Fair one day and you don't know where they are in 10 years.
Exactly.
And that
exactly.
It is
sort of. You
never
know when you're going to go out and you have to.
You never know when you're going to go out. And I was also, there was like this ringing in my family, like I wanted to be a child actor so badly, but my mother was constantly being like, the odds of doing that are so fucked up for you because you never know when you're gonna peak. And like Barbara Payton, I'm not ashamed. This, just before we really deep dive on the quotes, because this is the quotes
holding this book
is just like,
it's
whoa,
the perfect.
It's the perfect size, it's in a beautiful cover. Basically, her career was all of 3 years long.
It's very, very brief.
Yeah.
And yet in her very brief time in this earth, so she died at 39, she had five marriages.
Five marriages.
How many times have you all been married, by the
exactly.
way?
Exactly.
Oh, I think about this all the time.
Know,
you know, as a 35-year-old, you know, I'm so wrought with regret.
Why haven't I been divorced
that I don't,
three times?
That I don't have any divorces under my belt. And I, you know, sure, I have plenty of relationships, but why didn't I just pull the trigger
me
with
too.
Someone?
Well, I think
and I, 27, I could have said, you know what, fine, get married. I'll get divorced at 30. How fab will that be?
Yeah, exactly.
But I was too afraid to go all the way, and Barbara was not afraid, and
she
pulled the trigger constantly.
Yes, she.
I mean, she was this. She at a very young age. So she's basically grew up in Texas, in a little town called Odessa.
And, which apparently is the best place to get vintage
pierogies.
Furniture, boots, and furniture.
Boots?
Anyway,
well,
go
wait,
on.
Well, wait a minute, and then wasn't her? Oh no, her dad ran this. God damn, what was it? It was like a resort. It was like a vacation.
Yeah, it was like a little campsite.
Yeah. With like little cabins for like, you know, vacationing families.
And again, to be a blonde, I feel like she's prototyped to be a little blonde girl from Texas with dreams big. I mean,
with
that's
big tits and a pretty
face. Nicole Smith.
Yes, there we go.
Anna Nicole. She's very Anna Nicole. And she had this look to her, you know.
She is actually very,
she's very beautiful.
Anna Nicole.
And she had a little bit more of a voluptuous face and body than I think a lot of women at that time did.
Well,
it was like
she was like bigger though. There was like you're so right in terms of the Anna Nicole, like she's just like two sizes bigger than the
taws
rest
are
of
like
them.
Bigger than Marilyn.
The taws are bigger and the waist is a little bigger and the hips are a little bigger. Everything's just sort of like
a little bit bigger. I mean,
a little Texan.
Marilyn was quite small.
even though we're constantly being like, she was a 12. She was right. a 12. I swear to God, she was a fucking 12.
I know, Article yeah. Refinery yeah, 29 yeah. being yeah. like, did you know Marilyn Monroe was actually a size 8, which is actually a size 14 now, which yeah. actually was a size 16 yeah. in 1999.
Yeah, exactly. But because of great inflation, beauty standards have made us think she was tiny. She was not.
She was not. She was a fat cow.
She like, was yeah, a no. cow, and that is a slur. yeah. But she was fat.
Yeah.
And it's this, like, I mean, I think it also, this memoir follows a lot that are like, and Bouncy, this fat little pig of a boy, yes. shoved his tongue down Ding my dong, mouth, yeah. and then he was run over by a tractor yeah, later it's a that lot. Day.
Yeah. And that really affected her when that boy was run over by totally. The tractor.
And, like, yeah. the thing is, before we get into the boy on the tractor, there is, like, yeah, it's like, this is a complicated book because the prologue is like the best thing that's ever been written. It's so juicy. It's so profoundly confident. The rest of the book is really intense, but the prologue is so fab. So she had this career of like making like what would be millions of dollars now.
Right. She was making what, 10,000 a week?
A week, which now is like, honey.
No, I mean, if I was making 10,000 a week.
I know. And 10,000 in 1949, that's like $100,000 freaking dollars or some shit.
And she says, which is like, again, you never know when the star's going to fall. She was like, the craziest thing I did once was I bought a cameraman a house.
Yeah. So, she implies that she lost a lot of money because she was too nice. That she was just like, if I got a ring or a beautiful watch, I would give it to someone who needed it more. I bought the cameraman the house. Like, and well, I think yeah. maybe it's she a, maybe is revisioning a little bit.
A little bit.
I imagine sure. that a she spent that. A lot of money on booze and liquor and cars and furs and partying. And
she also mentions
Coke.
Very, very casually that she never had a bank account. Do you know what I mean? There's also that whole aspect.
Well, I'm sure like, it's also there's... hard to get a bank account those days.
Maybe. No, I mean, the crisis of the unbanked. In the 40s. yeah. Was quite
I mean,
intense.
After the Great Depression, they didn't freaking trust the things.
Yeah.
Right. You're Come walking on. Up. You're like, oh, here's all my money. She's like, I'm going to have my money in minx.
In minx. I'm going to sew my dollars in the linings of minx stoves.
I was shocked at, she's very into psychotherapy, very into psychoanalysis.
Dr. Blunt?
She goes to Dr. Blunt for quite
Bunt.
Some time.
Dr. Blunt.
And Dr. Blunt was $25 a session. That Which struck is- me as... an astronomical sum. And,
no, 100%. I felt the exact same way. I was like,
25,
is that...
because this is back when a movie is like 25 20 cents.
5 cents even.
I mean, let's get real. Hello. You know, you're going into that $10,000 a week salary and you're not, there's no savings account. There's no investment. There's no appreciation, whatever that's called, interest, you know.
Also, me. Her being into rosé, let's yeah, talk about was, that was, for a second.
She is deeply into rosé.
Yeah, so it's like she Which, is being original, like original? Texas Cavalieri yeah. girl boss.
She is. She is sort of a Cavalieri girl boss.
The original Texas girl boss. All right, if I may just read a quote here, just to like
Please.
Start to set the scene a bit. So what does a gorgeous young girl do when she's broke? Well... I got married a couple more times. 4 to be exact. They didn't work. Husbands wanted my body and not me. Anyway, that's the way it seemed. I don't know why they married me. I traveled a little. I liked Mexico the best. The people were simple and life was uncomplicated. It's not like in America where they kiss you on the cheek as a greeting. There, they bust you on the lips so that your teeth rattle. The people were sincere. A man will say, will you go to bed with me? He won't beat around the bush.
Okay.
And it's like she's just gone from being like, what did I do? I got married. I moved to Mexico. Yeah, men yeah. sleep with you. It's like she's always going all over the place and then be like, but back to my marriage with Franchot.
Yeah, but
and I'm kind of just like, you know, I'm starting to see maybe why your career did falter because you're always losing the plot a little bit.
Right. And she's like, oh, I was just filleting his fish day in, day out, thinking, is this the life? Maybe I should go back and act. And it's like, so yes. she's like, oh, Mexico's where you go to fuck. But I wanted to ask you about that part when she talks about how she knew the end of her marriage in Mexico was there was a storm and
that was such a beautiful part
and her husband's kind of going around trying to tape the windows or whatever and she's just like I lay on top of me and penetrate me
yes.
and hug me and kiss me and tell me and he won't do it
because she feels like the sheer force of the natural disaster
about should
to
like
happen.
Bring them together and he doesn't do it and then he's just like how are you at the end and she's like and that's when it was over
because she claims that he saw the true her
yes.
in that moment.
And
that,
I think she saw the true him.
Yeah. But I feel like because then it was like after the storm when she was in Mexico, leaving her like fading you know, acting career behind in Mexico, married a Mexican man, was fishing barefoot in jeans, the highlight of her life. Yeah. And then she goes, apparently this storm had killed like the majority of the town. And he was, I think he was being
checking
like,
for townspeople. And she was like, fuck me.
No, exactly. Okay. And I think he sort of in that moment saw that she was so into destruction, that right. she was so yeah. attracted to chaos. And he was sort of like, weird. And he was sort of like, I'm not into
it. He's like, my cousin's dying.
Yeah, exactly. She was sort of trying to pass it off as like, it's the end of the world. Like, if you can't fuck me now, when can you?
Yeah.
But he was actually being like, no, what it is that you're horny.
Yeah, and we have to keep surviving.
For mayhem.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Right, and I want to build and you want to destroy.
Exactly.
She's such an iconic, chaotic femme, like defining, storming out.
Yeah, I mean, every scene she's always just like, darling. I mean, because yeah, I'm sure it wasn't the first time that she had said, fuck me.
No. You know? But there is this interesting thing with this book where it's like, it's written so in her voice. Like,
right,
she's
so you're being all Team Barbara.
You're being Team Barbara, but then you're thinking like, oh, I know this girl. Like, she's a nightmare. But yeah. like, but like, it's. But at the same time, you're like, but maybe there is this like glimmer of hope in every page where it's like, maybe it was as crazy. Like, maybe they didn't understand her. Like, there is this bizarre like,
but I also,
kindness to her that I do think was like real. Also,
here's an example
saying that she's very kind. But I agree because she has an interest in everyone.
Yeah,
you know. And I think like one thing that Tina Brown said that I always think about is you can teach someone how to write structure, but you can't teach them what to notice.
Mm.
And I think that's so true. And when I read this book, I see her noticing the little fat boy. I see her noticing the horny other little fat boy.
Totally,
like I see
totally,
her noticing,
totally.
You
the
know,
creek
the
and
drunks
trees
and the, yeah. You know, and the freaks and the poors. And, you know, she has an eye for the downtrodden that is not feigned. It's like it's too deep.
Can I read my favorite 100% observation? She's talking about lesbians.
Yes.
Oh, the lesbian
it's this whole thing is insane. So she has this whole thing where she's like, it's like no one else is writing about this. This is pre Stone Butch Blues, where she's like, it's one thing for two girlies to like hook up and we'd be like two tragic femmes. But then she's like, but I never hooked up with like a real butch.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then she.
And she's writing about it so casually. And it's just this window into a world.
I am not
like,
ashamed.
I'm not ashamed.
She is not ashamed.
And so, like, obviously, everyone knew these terms, butch and femme. And they were, like, talking about butch dykes and, like, faggots.
Yes.
And, like, it wasn't some big secret.
No.
It wasn't like, oh, we had to wait until, like, you know, the women's movement of the 70s to learn these terms.
Well,
like,
what you also realize before you go into the thing is that so much of the scandal is that you realize that Hollywood didn't care about anything. It was about getting out to, like, the South and the Midwest. Right. It was like, everyone knew that so-and-so was gay. It's just, don't be public about it because the papers and then the movies. Like, it's like, it's, but everyone in Hollywood was.
Or even just general straight sex.
Totally.
Yeah.
100%. It was
having an affair.
But it
all
was only about selling tickets in the South and the Midwest and, like, more conservative places.
Yeah.
And, like, that's also sort of what this book is about, is, like, how she maneuvered her chaotic energy in maybe not a successful way, but she does sort of describe the studio system and the press machine in a very cool way. But anyway, go for the lesbians.
Well, and just before lesbians, it's like, it's also if, like, nothing's changed. Like, this whole book is so Harvey Weinstein.
It's so nothing's changed.
And it's like,
except for the real estate prices.
Like, hello. Like, I'm always shocked where you're like, oh, in olden times, like, they didn't talk like this. Or in olden times, like, they didn't do these things. And it's like, no, she's like calling all these hot girlies and like putting them in hotel rooms and then sending like male producers she knows there and being like, there's a surprise for you.
Yeah,
in
exactly.
And
that's how, like, she would get a part. Like, there's that whole part where she was like, all you have to do is send a hot girl to a hotel and then you tell that guy that just fucked her that you want the part. And it's like, how does that work? But it does.
There's all, there's
it's
so
like
many.
She is
galaning. When she goes, she's galaining herself.
Yeah.
Like, galaning the house down boots.
Yeah,
she goes and fucks the writer of that script to try and and get the role. He's like, because he can campaign to the director.
Yes.
And she's like sent all these photos of herself like looking like Betty Davis to the director or whatever. And they're all kind of ignoring them because it was kind of a reprise of this old Betty Davis role. And then she's like, you know what? I'm going to have to pull out
the big guns.
I'm going to have to go fuck the writer.
Yeah.
We can imagine how attractive he is.
Named Joe. It's like, oh my fucking God. But that he couldn't even get her the role. And it was that moment, I think, she actually decided to go to Mexico. Anyway, back to lesbians.
So first, I mean, we talk about this.
I love how Barbara Payton were being on this episode.
I know.
And like, but first, darling. Okay.
I know.
We talk a lot about on this podcast, you know, just lesbian pimp disease. Yes.
Right.
And I feel like she
describes that
it
butch,
perfectly,
who's been such a leaning against.
Who is like this, like, leaning, double breasted suit executive.
Yes.
She didn't waste any time. So she finally, this is her first hookup with a butch.
Yes.
Which is also, I feel like, first, like, very original of her. Like, not a lot of queer texts happen where it's like, yeah, this is it. She knows it is a different gender.
Yes.
She didn't waste any time. She was like a man, but a wolf man. The minute I got into that place, she got the clothes off me, and 5 minutes later, I was on the bed, a victim of her unnatural desires, which ranged from a kiss on the lips to perversions I had never even heard about, let alone experience. And when she was exhausted after several hours, I was bruised and beaten and hurt all over.
Yeah.
So total service top.
Was she fisted?
It sounds like she was just like fisted and
fucked
and turned. And then I'm just going to skip. So then Elton's insane. This butch locks her in a apartment.
Oh, yeah.
And says, don't you dare leave. Scary.
Absolutely scary.
But hot.
Yeah. Hot. And then later she goes, what I also found out much later is that dykes and butches are usually, behind their masculine looks, shy and frightened and seldom cruel. They need a femme, and when they get one, they are as gracious and considerate as a man on the make. The difference is a man loses some of his thoughtfulness after he scores, while a dyke never does.
Yes! I know.
I was like, chills.
I'm literally chills.
Like, okay, modern, like,
the
accuracy, like, queer
the
essay.
Accuracy.
Celebrity Book Club.
This episode is sponsored by ZocDoc.
You're trying to find a cause for your symptoms.
Achy back, headache, runny nose, itchy eye, wart on my genitals.
So let me guess, you stumble down a TikTok rabbit hole full of questionable advice from so-called experts.
Suddenly I have cancer? No thank you.
There are better ways to get the answers you want and the care you deserve from trusted professionals and not random people on the internet. Though randoms, I love you, and my TikTok addiction, it stands.
But I'm sorry, Lily, you shouldn't be getting medical advice from some girl in her grandmother's basement in Toronto.
ZocDoc helps you find expert doctors and medical professionals that specialize in the care you need and deliver the type of experience you want.
That's right. Ditch the talk, get the doc. ZocDoc is the only free app that lets you find and book doctors who are patient-reviewed, take your insurance, are available when you need them, and treat almost every condition under the sun.
No more doctor roulette or scouring the internet for questionable reviews. With ZocDoc, you have a trusted guide to connect you to your favorite doctor you haven't met yet.
I love a trusted guide, like the time I climbed to Machu Picchu on the Inca Trail with a team of Sherpas. Millions of people use ZocDoc's free app to find and book a doctor in their neighborhood who is patient-reviewed and fits their needs and schedule just right. So find your Sherpa at ZocDoc.com. Go to ZocDoc.com/bookclub and download the ZocDoc app for free.
Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. Slay. Many are available within 24 hours. That's ZocDoc.com/bookclub. ZocDoc.com/bookclub.
Ditch the talk.
We're doing so much theory. That's the other thing about this book. There's so this cut. This go. You never have to read a theory book again because she's just saying it in a sentence. Let's go. Boom. And it's between so much psychedelia and going back and forth, and you don't really know what's going on. And then she goes with these sentences that cut your penis is off. It's insane.
No, the way that she diagnoses desire and fear and what is at the root of our anxiety in an instant and so confidently, right? She's not saying that, just like, you know, I think that dykes are like this.
Yes.
Dykes do this, period.
And it's like, that is so true. It's like, yeah, one, that is why it's like, I feel like dykes are like... Personally, myself, you're like, I have to be this huge man. Mm. And then, but of course, since you've done so much work to do that, you are like shy on the inside and then are like,
I love all the scenes where she is, where she's describing some interactions she had with a man, and she's really, really zeroing in on his attraction and the power that she has over him. The first time that she realizes she has this power over a man is the kitten incident.
Oh, yes.
Do you remember
this? Yes.
So there's this boy, Edward, and she wants to fish in his stream.
This is a crazy moment.
So he goes, "My name is Edward," he offered. "Will you give me a kiss if I give the whole stream to you and whatever's in it, like fish?" And she goes, "But I already won the stream and the fish. I was no slob and I learned fast. Maybe for a kiss I could get something I didn't have." It seemed like an easy way to get something. "Well, Edward," I said sweetly, "maybe you could have a kiss if you had something that I wanted. Like a kitten, for instance. I've always wanted a tiny kitten." "Sure, I'll get you a kitten," he said eagerly. He sloshed into the stream to kiss me, but I was wise. The kitten first. I smiled.
Get the kitten first, ladies.
And she goes, "I don't remember anymore whether he got me the kitten or whether I even gave him the kiss, but the scene was an awakening."
She knew. And
she was like, "That's it."
Well, there is just
this. It's the promise.
And like,
that confidence also.
I know. And like how
she's just born with it.
Totally. And there is something so, so contemporary about her. Like the way she looked was so like literally euphoria boots, where it's like she also wore like I used to talk about this in my show. She wore face tattoos on her face, like little hearts on her face and little devils on her face.
So she actually is Marilyn Monroe as a Chola t-shirt.
Yes, literally. And like she, and also, which is described in the book, but I forgot where it was, how she got the Jimmy Cagney part was that it was a sweltering hot day. She walks into the casting office. Every girl is pretending to be not hot.
Yeah, they're like,
I'm not sweating. She walks into the casting office. She opens
this
up her
iconic
skirt. She fans her crotch and she goes, "It's a fucking hot day." And that's how she gets it.
And there's another girl in the room already who was like doing her audition.
Yeah, who faints on the couch because it's just like Barbara Payton's like, fanning her cootie.
So
when I read that, I was
unbelievable.
Like, right, as someone with no agent here, I was like, why am
That's
I not?
Another part, yes.
But another part, but that asking for roles, just walking into the casting room.
Well, that's
down.
The thing is, I.
Do you feel you have that?
Okay,
that
so this is an interesting thing that you do need to do all this stuff. I have only weeks ago realized that we are going to have to be staging pyrotechnics. Yes, and fanning our crotch. And only, you know, a few weeks ago, I did.
Because we get more forgettable by the day.
No, totally. And you're going to have to go, "No, I want this. Hello." You have to go,
knock,
knock. And that is true. I don't think, again, Barbara Payment's a great example where it's like, you also then have to show up on time and be a great actress.
Yes.
And there is like...
You can't Lohan it.
No, you can't
fan the crotch and then go fish in Mexico.
And I do think there's
not
like,
at least in the same week.
There's a rawness to her talent that I've read about. but you can
I'm
just
so obsessed by
know,
the way that
I
you've
know,
never seen
I
Barbara.
Know.
I was
I know.
Really thinking you were going to be like, well,
and then
Jesse
beep,
beep, James. Pop
up. Yeah, no, I know. I'm just going to be honest here. I am not ashamed. And then we go, you know, you can see in her photos even like she's obviously raw girl. But if you see the other girls that were raw girls, one of them being Shelley Winter is my favorite actress actually of all time.
Who's such a hunted.
But no. Shelley Winters prevailed. She was like, also,
I mean, her face is hunted.
Very, yes. Very. But what Shelley Winters, for example, was this sort of raw, you know, nerve of a talent. But she studied her craft like obsessively. And then as she, like in the 60s after Lolita and a few other parts, she just decided like, I just want to teach actors. I'm so over this shit. And just sat in a bar fucked everybody
yes.
and got fat and just and like was just like, I'm out. Yeah, because yeah. but it's yeah. because she had she was such an equipped, skilled actor that she could do whatever she wanted. Like, there is this aspect of Barbara where it's like, she is a cautionary tale a little bit in terms of like when your mom's like, you do need a skill to fall back on. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
but you're saying that she maybe wasn't that good of an actress, or is she, she got far for how good
I think she got as far as good she was. And I don't think, because acting, mind you, is you do, I'm not like a huge study, but I do think you need a technique to fall back on. Mm. You do. A lot of her roles were film noir where she's getting like abused and shit. And I do think she was like a raw nerve. And I don't think she really could recuperate from a lot of this work. Like, I don't think she had the skill to keep chugging out the raw nervous without, it's like you can't be a raw nerve on screen and then also be fucking every night and alcohol like, because it feeds each other, but it does need be sort of understood as like your craft.
I think you're right, and I think it's like if you're say Reese Witherspoon and you're always playing like uptight mom characters
and she could use a little more you know
but she like she's just running her like empire business shirt line book club whatever there's like that's fine to do that 24/7
totally,
but if your thing is being insane like raw nerve
100%.
Is being like traumatic woman who's getting in fights and breaking bottles, it's like you can't do that 24/7
and
you have to find the discipline and the structure in order to be able to turn it on and off.
Because also what happened like around 1953, she got married to Joan Crawford's ex, Franco Tone. Okay. And then there was this love affair with this like butch.
And she keeps talking about Tom Neal. She was in a public love triangle, which is so fabulous.
So fabulous. But it ended in this brawl that like got Franco Tone like severely injured. Tom Neal was like a fucking boxer brawlic dude.
And she talked about his body and everything.
Yes. And that like it was so passionate. It was the love of her life, whatever. But she left, Franco Tone was really respected in Hollywood, and she left him basically for Tom O'Neill. But there was like trials she had to go to. She was so publicly the girl in the movies. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
And that is the issue where it's like, you can't be a gangster on screen and a gangster off screen in 1953.
This is a court photo.
It is. That is a court photo from one of her arrests as a prostitute.
Right. It's a prostitute arrest.
That's a prostitute arrest, but she was arrested many times. The first time she did appear in court was in the Tom O'Neill and Franco Tone case. And that was such a huge scandal in Hollywood at the time. And like, you do need to like image make. Like, it's like, and it's like, why would. There's an aspect to Barbara Payton where it's like you feel like she didn't even subtly change.
Yeah.
Like she was just purely herself all the time, which initially got her the parts because she's so vivacious and cool and confident.
Fuck, I'm hot.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Fuck, I'm hot today. I'm sweating my balls off. But it's like, and we love that. But if it's like that all the time.
Well, in the comparison to Mae West, who was playing these body characters and then was also body in real life. But I think Mae West was a little more like.
She was so disciplined.
Actually more Reese Witherspoon and so disciplined and was like, I'm actually working nonstop, and yes, maybe I am married to five men, but the work is
my
boyfriend.
Well, the other thing about Mae West, when she arrived in Hollywood, was 40 in 1929.
Oh, so she was already going into playing the madame of the pub.
Not only that, no, she had survived her reactionary 20s. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
She had survived such a large portion of her life where it's like she was going into Hollywood as a fully formed human being, whereas Barbara Payton,
she was 19,
was 19, 18,
yeah,
and was just like,
okay,
she
this
got
is
earth-shattering, you know what I mean?
News.
Yes, no, I know, and everyone needs to know about Mae West being
40
in 1929, which is 700 years
this
old.
This has now changed my
entire life.
Yeah.
I know. And the thing about Barbara Payton is a story similar to the fact, if you think that Drew Barrymore literally was 27 when she produced Charlie's Angels, you go, how is that possible? She seemed like she was 45. And you go, because she was 18, so young.
Yeah.
The thing is like, no one should want early fame because you get older faster, literally. Because do you know what I mean? Barbara Payton is the story of literally being old by the time you're 39.
I mean, she aged quite rapidly.
Yes. Yeah. But it's not only just about the heavy drinking. It's about, like,
getting
how,
into fame. Yes. Like, how, Drew is yes. the success. And then yes. it's, like, all those other Brat Pack 80 stars who were, like, molested and then became Christian and, like...
Exactly. The, that, yes.
They're the Barbara Paige. The camera.
Yeah. Totally.
She had a very interesting quote about fame where she said, "Stardom requires faith in what it is."
Yes.
Do you remember this?
And oh my she, God.
Which is so you.
And she's saying that if you are too smart, right?
Yes.
So if you see the seams, if you pull back the curtain and you kind of get that, oh, maybe like just getting adoration from random people and getting these accolades and getting some guy who wants your autograph is actually kind of hollow. If you start to see that, then you're going to lose stardom because, yes. like, you're going to lose yeah. the drive to pursue it. You're going to yes. lose, like, all the trappings yes. of that come with it because you're just not going to care as much. And it's going to slip away from you, and it's going to go to someone who believes in it.
You have to lie to yourself.
We're probably all lying to ourselves.
I mean, let's hope so. But I do think also what's so interesting is that she also, like, sort of characterizes this compulsion to be famous as, like, a disease, which I really do think is also, again, pre-theory, like Camille Paglia-Hu,
yes.
like, is, like, so major. And, okay, so this is also in the prologue. So she, like, goes to Mexico. Do-do-do-do. "My big problems were what to cook for dinner and how. Maybe that was the life I was cut out to lead, you think? But it was inevitable that the ants in my pants would start crawling again. I wanted to be happier than happy. And that's always a big mistake." And, like,
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like she's like nuclear with yeah. her truths.
No, I mean, and that's.
"I wanted to be happier and happy, and that's always a big mistake." I mean, like.
That gets
my
to gay panic. You
yeah,
know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That is gay
yes,
panic.
Yeah, yes.
Absolutely.
It is. "I want to be happier and happy." It's just like, because you just can't feel content, can
yeah,
you?
Can you?
You just no. can't be satisfied.
You can't just be present. The other thing about it, also, this book is like, I'm not ashamed. Is this book where it's like, right, it could be a cautionary tale, but I argue, don't get too caught up on anything.
I mean, she wasn't caught up, I think, is a lie as well.
That's what I'm saying.
Right.
But that's what I mean. It's like,
so
I think she
that's
became,
why she was taking to the rosé
yeah.
and the fish.
100%. But I do think there was moments in which she wasn't caught up that were sort of real.
I do think
this is like not like, it is a sad book. It actually did sort of depress me when I finish it, but it is a sad book, but it's also like this bizarre thing of like, babe, it comes, it goes, it goes sideways, it goes left, it goes right, like, buckle up, buttercup, like, it's gonna be okay. Like, even though it wasn't ultimately okay for her, like, there is this aspect, I don't know, there is this like sort of freedom in this book that I do think it is abjectly sad and horrifying, but it also isn't. There's this other, I don't
yeah.
know what that is.
I honestly think I've read other, I feel like we've read other memoirs where I'm trying to think of like, you know, maybe an Elizabeth Taylor who had
yeah.
so much tragedy, but like obviously like died richer and like more respected
than
her. But
you know, what is dying rich? What is dying with respect?
Yeah.
What is dying with some sort of legacy? Is that all it's for? Because you're dead when you're dead, you know?
Totally.
And so the idea that, oh, thank God I've left behind like this incredible Wikipedia page is,
yeah, exactly.
Is
exactly.
even more depressing,
totally.
Right? Because like, you know, obviously like the classic way to look at a life like this is, well, she lived more lives than her little pinky than most people ever,
yeah, 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 yeah,
ever
yeah.
do, you know? Yeah. And their whole goddamn life.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, that's fabulous and she has a lot to say and
she does have a lot of great sex.
At some points I was getting a little bit Lena Dunham vibes
yes,
also from her.
I know, there is, honestly. I mean,
I guess
especially
I,
her relationship with sex, honestly.
That, yeah,
which
the,
is
the
crazy.
Sex part
yeah,
was
yeah.
a little Lena.
What I appreciate is the honesty, obviously. I wonder if there, when she's talking about desire, she's talking about the things that make her happy, the moments when she was most happy. Like you said, your hair fell out. It's like, I felt like that is
yeah,
so accurate,
that's
right?
That's so accurate.
And I felt the same thing for myself. I was like, well, of course, that the happiest times in my life have been these moments when I felt incredibly desired. Right.
Yes.
And these moments when I felt incredibly successful, like at the top of the world, everybody wanted a piece of me. And I wonder, I guess I like it's better to be honest about that than to lie, of course. Right.
Yes.
For your own sanity.
Yes.
But I also wonder, is that all there is? You
right.
know what I mean? Because then you, and is there something else? Is there this contentment? You know, she was never truly happy on the beach in Mexico. Or was she?
Well, there's more time to can we talk think. About her strategy of like to come off as like woke and like fuck with the studio system by bringing a black guy and
oh,
then he's like,
yes.
don't use me.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, this was like such a modern like white girl tale.
This is very
so she's like wants to give it to the studio system. Yes. And she's like, yeah, I love like black guys. And so like she brings this guy and like if the studio system like freaks out and they're like no black people allowed at this studio party. And then of course they get back to her apartment and she's like, fuck me.
right.
And he's like,
she always does.
Yeah, yeah. And he's like, I actually prefer you don't use me to like get aroused.
Out of the studio.
After Mr. MGM. And she's like, oh, fine. And then she's like, learning moment. I got it.
Yeah. But then she also then in the end finds out that the head of MGM was having sex with her black maid.
Right.
And
who, then no, sends, but who she gave a photo to.
Yeah. And then she takes nude pictures of,
the maid and gives it to the studio head.
And be like, ding dong, I know you're a liar.
And
like,
she goes, like, here's a little photo for you.
The strategy is insane.
So and it's like, she's taking out f-stop color. You know, it's like, she's doing full photo class.
And there is aspects where it's like, Barbara, are these good strategies or are people just terrified of you? Like,
her strategy sometimes is like, girl, where are you getting
this?
When she figured out that like the Shah of Iran had actually been fucking this young starlet.
A baby starlet.
Yeah. But actually, because the new star in the movie that she'd been passed over for was this aging old woman who then later got photographed with the Shah in the water, but the photos were from very far away and you couldn't see what was happening.
Exactly.
And she realized it was actually the young starlet and this was all a cover because the studio found out, and so they gave the reporter a false story to plant.
Right. And so then the old actress got the part because she was hired to do that.
And then when she reveals it and she's like sort of saunters into the MGM office. It's always MGM also when we're talking about this.
Even though it fully is never MGM. She's fully like only at RKO, but that's okay.
And she wanders into the MGM.
Fact check, it was actually RKO.
It was actually RKO, which is actually, and James Cagney was actually owned by Warner Brothers. Okay, bye.
And then she's like revealing that she knows the tea, and she'd be like, well, my, how a showgirl does get around, doesn't
then,
she? Be a shame for her to take a boat ride, wouldn't it?
And then the head of MGM is like, doing, and he goes, you knew! and then period, she doesn't get the part.
So but it's she's like, what? And there it worked, darling.
Yeah, and then
like,
she's like,
what?
And I'm a detective. So, it's like,
anyway, she's a mastermind, really.
Yeah, but who knows where it's all going.
I'm
going
to do the same thing to, like, the executive producer of Euphoria, and I'm going to, like, I'm going to pimp out some, you know, some boy and send him actually to Florida to then to Milan and then take a secret video. I don't get a role. And I'm like, see?
See, I did that.
It worked.
Celebrity Book Club.
This week on the VIP Lounge, we have Ruby McAllister dishing some nasty dirt about Hollywood, and that full episode and an episode just like it will be out every week. And best of all, if you subscribe on Patreon, you can hear our podcast with no ads.
Here's a clip from this week's show.
You know, I dismissed Marianne Williamson in the presidential election. Completely crassly.
I knew she was on to something.
No, and I'm so mad at myself that I betrayed myself, who I am, and said, oh, Marianne, what was the fuck was I talking about?
Oh, let me guess. You were trying to impress a Bernie bro.
Probably.
Yeah.
Subscribe on patreon.com/CBCThePod to get more content like that every single week for only $5 a month.
The segment studio system.
What does she wear? How does she live?
What does she eat? She loves clams, darling.
And wine.
Rosé and clams.
Yeah, it's giving rosé and clams.
Yeah.
And also oranges. She mentions oranges a lot.
Cara oranges.
It's very much.
Well, it's very like crazy grandmother sending you a box of oranges.
Totally.
Did you get my oranges, darling?
Yeah, you know what's cool is there wasn't as much food back then.
There wasn't. Barbara Payton's very from Texas. She's very much like
cow.
Cow. Orange. You know, she's and we respect that.
Classic Texas cow orange.
Cow. What do I eat? Cow orange.
Why?
Exactly.
A clam if I'm in Mexico.
Yeah, exactly. A clam if I'm in Mexico.
What does she wear?
I mean, a mink that was given to her.
Yeah.
To me, she's like, isn't she like going out in a slip dress? Like, she kind of invented the slip dress.
Yeah, she did. I feel like she was like
Slip and mink.
Yeah, like a slip and mink. And she, again, really literally did do stickers on her face.
That's iconic.
Unbelievable.
It's so crazy.
And I think today,
literally it is crazy in Euphoria. It's like,
she would have gotten like a snake bite piercing.
100 If she knew it was
Maryland piercing, snake bite piercing. Like,
but instead, like, she literally found stickers that were shaped as horned devils. Like, you know that Gucci Chateau Marmont collab where it's like, not horned devils dancing. Like, she got that on her face.
Which is, you think rockabilly flame belts are like, oh, the 90s 80s doing the 50s, but you're like, wait, so devil stuff was also just around. You could get devil stickers. And
yeah,
devil
it was just like, yeah.
Was she doing flame cherries? Belts. She had.
She was sort of doing cherries. She was doing cherries devil flames. It was, she was sort of a renegade style. And even like, even when she got arrested for prostitution, she has like this amazing cardigan on and this bathing suit underneath and gold slippers on. And
just
like,
so American Apparel to be wearing like a bathing suit, slippers,
with a sweater. With a sweater.
Long cardigan.
So I do actually think she had style.
She had style and she had like classic, I mean, e-girl. Like,
yes, she did.
Sleepy, sexy girl.
And it is, I mean, obviously the Lana Del Rey.
But also
lines
a little more like 90s Courtney Love with the make and slip.
Totally. And burning her hair on a cigarette or whatever, you know.
How did she live?
Well, she lived well for some time. And
then in squalor for others.
I mean, she was like, so at the end and beginning throughout the book, she's like, yeah, so rats are crawling all over me right now.
Yeah, it's crazy. And what happened was that this guy from Doubleday Press like met her at a bar and was like, can I just record you talking? And
that's
in
how
her
the memoir
well,
came
see,
about.
Yeah, yeah. The line, I'll read the line on
please,
the back of the book.
Please.
Today, right now, I live in a rat, roach, parentheses, their friends, infested apartment with not a bean to my name and I drink too much rosé wine.
Not a bean.
Rat,
not a
roach,
bean.
Not their friends. How fab is that? Yeah. They're friends.
They're friends. They're absolute friends. No, and yeah, so how did she live? She lived high, she lived low, she lived sideways.
I think she kind of was also very mattress on the floor.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Because that goes to slip and make. You know, it's girl mattress on floor with, you know, Chanel on the ground.
For cover, sure.
A rat is sleeping.
And
with
she
Chanel.
Also is like mentioning a lot in the book that she's writing poetry. So she's very journal too.
Oh.
She's
yeah.
definitely like journal, notebook girl.
Journal by bedside table. I think when she was living with Franchot Donne, I think that they were living in like a classic, like almost, I'm just picturing the house my father grew up in Westchester, Los Angeles.
What is it?
Just super mid-century, like small, like low house.
Definitely one-story house.
Like long, low couch. Definitely. Like all the dark wood, like furniture.
And sort of like those doors that are half doors. A lot of half doors
and like circle
saloon,
cutouts.
Maybe.
There's
a saloon aspect to it.
Oh, I see. So
there's an upright piano that doesn't get played.
Yes.
2 weeks before she dies at her parents' house in this mid-century San Diego ranch, she wrecks her father's Cadillac.
Wow. And you know I crashed my grandmother's Volvo after she died.
And you're still with us. So
our car into the bridge and I don't care, you know. There's this sort of an epitomal... There is sort of like an e-girl aspect to Barbara Payton that is major.
No,
I feel like she has a type in every decade.
True.
Because like 90s, the Courtney Love, 80s, you know, it's a little Madonna.
Or it's very like Madonna, Sean Young.
I think Madonna
it's very
is
like,
too controlled.
No, not Madonna. A girl who idolizes Madonna. And like wears the slip and the cross, but is like tragic.
I mean,
it's more what I'm thinking of.
Maybe.
Well, should we say? I mean, let's get. Who are you in the book?
Okay.
So, I mean, I was reading this and I was like, okay, this is Ruby.
I know,
but not the lifestyle. It's like the way it talks and talking about fame and the theories. But like, you're actually, I would say, a little bit of a good girl.
I'm a good girl.
I'm the mom friend.
Yeah, I'm the mom friend. But this is the thing, like that has plagued me my whole life, which you can get into when you come to my one-woman show at Joe's Poob on August 19th, is that, you know, I seem like, it's like, why do I relate so much to this prostitute, alcoholic? Like, why? It's like I've always only related to women like this, and yet I'm not like
because obviously. I don't think you could relate that hard if you were like them.
Really? It's my whole life since I was a child.
Because you would be too busy. You'd be too busy in the goddamn gutter, darling. You know what I mean?
But you'd be too busy taking the slip on and off.
You have time to be a little more ghost world and watching the old movies and taking out the old books. It's true.
But my question is, it's the high, the low, the struggle, the confidence, the retrospection. You know, why is that me?
You know, that
my question is, I brought you this book because why? God damn it. I have my skin. I pay my rent on time. You know, what is it about these women?
That you relate to so deeply.
Is it the word relate? What you're saying is that you are the race.
That you are together.
Yeah.
I'm not the race.
What is it?
The race is far.
So there it is.
I'm not Reese and I'm not Barbara, but where am I?
Winona.
This is something I talk about in my show as well, is I've tried so hard to become a drug addict, to stay up late. Darlings, I can't stay up late. My body goes, nope, there's something, there's a will larger than myself that goes, no, you don't.
It's the will to not destroy. And I certainly,
Which you don't choose. That's what I'm saying. My brain wants to destroy. I want to detonate the bomb. But there's something larger than me that goes, darling, you are so tired. Go to bed.
You're more Betty Davis.
Yes. I mean, ultimately, yes.
In the book. In the book. And you, Stephen, because I think it's like
Betty Davis only had a boringer life. I feel like she was a little more just like,
there's so much drama and she played these crazy roles.
She loves the drama and yet.
I think she was going to bed. She was definitely going to bed, reading her scripts.
And she wasn't like fucking and sucking. That was the whole thing about Betty Davis too. Whereas Joan Crawford sort of was more fucking and sucking. But you know, it's like there is, what I'm not ashamed also is weirdly what I'm talking about. It's like there is sometimes a power greater than yourself pushing you to the docks of Mexico.
Okay, I just wanted to say, I did notice a gay guy, maybe.
Okay, let's hear.
She goes, it's like a friend of mine once told me. He was working in Macy's department store for $18 a week, and 2 weeks after that, he was getting $125 a week as a publicist at Warner Studio, where one day he was putting cold compresses on Betty Davis's head. And I was just like, from Macy's to Betty Davis, publicist who's putting cold compresses on Betty Davis, that is a gay.
That's a gay guy.
That's a gay
guy job.
I don't think I'm the butch who like locked her.
You definitely are. I'm not.
I would say a little.
You're the butch who's like losing her keys. You want to lock someone in the apartment.
I think there's a. I mean, even though she's not a butch, there is a character. It's like a sort of a closeted starlet who undresses in front of her, and then. They have a passionate love affair. That innocence, I feel
okay,
like.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Just sort of like innocent.
That person wasn't being innocent. She was being...
She was. She was being like, here I am, Barbara. That vulnerability.
Okay, you're right.
The
yes.
vulnerability.
Innocent as the day you were born.
Yeah, vulnerable as the day you
right,
were born.
Right, the same thing. I want to be a badass, but, you know.
Yeah, we are who we are. And I think in that moment that closet lesbian, you know, actress was saying, Barbara...
Hello.
I can't stay up, but I can get naked. You know,
right now.
That exactly.
I give this book 4 out of 5 major studios.
Mm.
Yeah, I give this book 4.1.
Yeah.
Clams in Mexico.
And I give this book, honestly, I'm going to say a 4.5.
It's really lovely. Yeah. It's a little random.
It's a little psycho.
It's a little scattered.
We were kind of going back and being like, hold on, which husband?
She is scattered. But it's a nice read. It's a nice length. It's a gorgeous book. I give it 4 out of 5. Casting couches.
I love it.
Yes.
Well, darling, Ruby, thank you so much. This has been
such a joy. And again, thank
you so much. Thank you for being vulnerable, and
thank you
for being ashamed.
And being present.
I'm not ashamed.
You're not ashamed. And you're not ashamed to tell us when your Joe's Pub Show is again.
It is on August 19th at 9 p.m.
Wow, and that's in New York City?
That's in New York City.
Downtown.
Downtown, Manhattan.
Darling, if you're not in New York, I want you to go down to your local Greyhound depot, and I want you to get a ticket. It probably doesn't cost more than 75 cents. It'll take you all the way to Manhattan.
Get on a bus. Have an adventure, darlings.
For once in your goddamn life.
In your life. Okay, well, everyone, dolls.
Best.
Thank you. Best. Celebrity Book Club is presented by Prologue Projects. This show is produced by Benjamin Frisch with editorial support from Leon Nafok and Andrew Parsons plus Arlene Arievalo and Madeline Kaplan. Our production manager is Persia Verlin. Our intern, Noah John. Original theme song by Stephen Phillips Horst. Artwork by Teddy Blanks at Chips NY. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at CBC The Pod. Subscribe on your favorite podcast app. Leave us a review. And don't forget to tell your friends about us. And don't forget to go to the Patreon.com for access for the VIP lounge, our exclusive bonus podcast.
Wow.
Iconic.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
We're all looking for ways to save, especially on medical bills. But where do you start? Unless you're a medical billing expert, finding savings can seem impossible. HealthLock can help. HealthLock is a healthcare technology company that securely connects with your insurance and flags errors like overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. Saving starts with knowing where to look. Visit HealthLock.com today before you see another healthcare provider.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.